Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. Mary Mendenhall, our guest on today's program, is a community health nurse, studied the social sciences, cross-cultural communications, and the performing arts before serving in developmental mission work in Cyprus and Uganda. A lover of storytelling and spirituality, her poems and short stories grew into novels based on the lives and struggles of people she met in her travels. Michael and the Ice Princes, a mystical romance, a lyrical novel mixed with fairy tale plot, called Beguiling and Imaginative, a fascinating literary introduction to mystical thought on the nature of self-discovery, spiritual power, and the psychological freedom from the past. A 2021 finalist Book Excellence Awards for Christian Fiction. Also for Mary Mendenhall, the critically acclaimed The Wrong Side of Eternity, A Present-Day Passion. Set in overlapping worlds of West Coast America and rural Uganda between the late 1970s and 2001. Called masterfully written and well-conceived, an important thought-provoking novel with staying power. The Wrong Side of Eternity, winner of the 2016 Pinnacle Book Achievement Award for Historical Fiction and finalist for Multicultural Fiction for the 2017 Best Book Award and 2018 Book Excellence Awards. Mary Mendenhall, author of Michael and the Ice Princes, A Mystical Romance, and The Wrong Side of Eternity, A Present-Day Passion, joins us on This Week in America. Mary, welcome to the program. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Hi, Rick and all listeners. Nice to meet you.
Well, same here. Same here. I feel like we're close and we're thousands of miles apart, but we're connected. The video version of this, by the way, you'll find on YouTube. Go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Click on videos and you'll see the video portion of the program, the audio version and video version, both available there. You've got so much going on we want to talk about on the program today. Let's start off by talking about Michael and the Ice Princes. What was the inspiration to write this story and how did it evolve?
Well, I have to tell you, these books make you write them. It wasn't something I had as a goal, but before I married, I wrote my fiance a short story about the transformation of a cold-hearted woman into a loving, supportive person. So it sort of developed from that, and it had a little sprinkling of magic in it, but it was just a kernel of the book that came to be in 1996.
Yeah, it's amazing how sometimes the circumstances provoke you into, motivate you into writing the book, and that sounds like what happened with Michael and the Ice Princes. Now, at the time, you were living in rural East Africa when you wrote the book. How did that affect the process and the storyline?
In a couple of ways, Rick. First of all, we arrived in southwest Uganda 2 months before the Rwandan genocide. So that was raging next door. I was reading the Christian mystics from the 1600s at the time, and I found them really helpful, but I also found them difficult. And I said, somebody should put this into a story form because it would make it easier to, absorb. And so the two waves crashed together. I needed something to cope with the genocide next door. I needed some way to live out my devotional life and my thoughts. And the story came rushing back into my head. And so I saw that as a kind of a therapy, kind of a coping.
Yes.
And also a way to describe the local surroundings, which were pretty medieval in the rural part of Africa where I was living. So it all was... It was a matter of timing, but I wrote it for coping. I did.
The book, this book is Michael and the Ice Princes. You will find it at Mary's website, which is marymendenhall.net. I'm going to spell that. Mendenhall is mendenhall.net. Information on Mary and all of her books at that website. And I'll give you this throughout the program. So if you want to jot them down, go ahead. AuthorReputationPress.com. You'll find the books. Amazon, of course, all of the usual places. The title is Michael and the Ice Princes. The subtitle is A Mystical Romance. Explain the subtitle.
Well, the subtitle is off-putting to many people who find the word mystical sort of occultish, which is absurd because, Christian people talk about having a personal relationship with God, which is exactly what mysticism is. It's an opening of the spirit so that you can encounter the divine. So the romance is not a Harlequin romance. It's a mystical romance. It's a spiritual romance. It's told in the form of, I'm not going to say an allegory. That's not really the case, but it's more of a parable about the love and the release of this woman to God. And Evelyn Underhill writes a beautiful poem at the beginning about the Lady Poverty. So that's what the mystical part is.
The book is so well received, so well written, an award-winning book. The book is Michael and the Ice Princess. When you wrote this book, what type of research did you have to go through before you felt comfortable in writing it?
Well, the background isn't a specific medieval setting. It's sort of in northern Italy, kind of environs Eastern Europe, but it's very vague, and that's on purpose because I do like the reader to insert their own imagination as much as possible, so I don't hyper-describe things. But I just lost the track of your question again.
Well, yes, I'm just asking about any research that you had to do for this.
I did quite a bit of reading on medieval Europe, especially during plague times, and that's always been an interest of mine. I studied English literature in college, and Milton and Dante and some of their ways of thinking. So yeah, it's a pastor paid me a compliment. He said that you don't read back into that history, our current worldview. You really try to, you know, look at the worldview from that era, which is when the mystics wrote.
Well, that's interesting and an important distinction. So often we look back, and it's looked back through the prism of modern day society as opposed to in context during those particular times. You do such an excellent job in writing, have been so successful at it. How did you begin writing? How long have you been writing?
Well, thank you, Rick. I appreciate that. I was discouraged from a career in the arts because my parents were so practical, so I went into nursing. I love nursing, but you know, I started writing in third grade. My teacher saw that I was bored, and he saw my reaction to Robert Frost's poem "Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening," and he gave me a workbook, and he said, "This is for you in your spare time. You can just, you know, write for your own pleasure, and if you want to share things with me, you can. If not, cool." So he actually started me out in my writing career in third grade. And I've been writing poems and reflections and journals and newsletter articles all this time. But I sometimes feel bad that I didn't study how to write. I just kept doing it.
Well, maybe that would have put some constraints on you. Now you feel, I'm just going to go write, and it's very successful the way you do it. So don't overthink it. Just keep writing the way that you're doing that. Talk about that transformation from I'm writing, I'm enjoying it, to actually publishing a book. That's a major jump. What was it like for you to decide to publish this book in particular?
Well, I have to say I was terrified. I grew up really not believing in myself, you know, or my work. So I wrote two authors that I appreciated. One is Henry Nouwen. He's a Catholic devotional writer. May he rest in peace. And the other is Elizabeth Sherrill. She wrote for Guidepost magazines. I was in Uganda. There was no college nearby, nobody to consult with. And I wrote them both. I asked them to pray for me because I think I was supposed to write a book. So again, the book pressured me into writing it. It was like I could not write this thing. So the mission overcame my lack of confidence. And I did receive letters from both of them with great encouragement. So I'm so thankful that they kind of cheerleaded me on.
Well, so are the readers. They've really, the reviews are excellent on Michael and the Ice Princess, the book available at authorreputationpress.com, of course, Amazon, the usual places. Mary's website, and the author is Mary Mendenhall, Mary Mendenhall, etc., etc.net. And I'll give you that here in a second. That's her website that's got all of the information on the books and on Mary on that website, and all of that on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Who encouraged you to write for a wider audience?
Well, I'm just saying those two authors encouraged me to actually pursue publishing because they thought I had some sort of voice. And that's been true really my whole adult career. People have sort of been interested in what I had to say. I'm kind of a deep thinker, and I I just get so enthusiastic about sharing some of the glories that I've seen and witnessed and noticed. And I admire so much people who go through stuff. So actually, my Ugandan neighbors were models for some of my characters in both books.
You do such a job, a nice job in telling the story. Talk about comparing this book, Michael and the Ice Princes, with other books.
I guess the best people to compare it with would be George MacDonald wrote sort of mystical romances back in the 1800s. He was a model for C.S. Lewis. Some of his short stories are amazing. The Light Princess is one, and so it's The Princess and the Goblin. Those are kind of classical children's literature. But he dealt with some pretty spiritual stuff and also mythic stuff in his fairy tales. So I think that would be the easiest thing to compare to. Style-wise, I would go with Elizabeth Googe, who is a British author who writes beautiful stories set in England, but there's also a little mystical streak to them, too. So those would be the comparable authors for Michael and the Ice Princess. The other book has different authors I would compare to.
Well, we're talking about two books today written by our guest on the program, Mary Mendenhall. This one is Michael and the Ice Princess. One more question, and then we'll shift gears and talk about The Wrong Side of Eternity. What is, do you think, the essential spiritual message you want to offer readers in Michael and the Ice Princess?
Well, I'm not gonna give anything away, but Michael and the Ice Princess is a quest story, and it's a quest for identity, which I think everybody can relate to at some level. In fact, I'm so pleased that many of my friends who are not Christians or religious people of any sort really like my writing. That pleases me to no end. But it's about finding yourself by giving yourself away. That's really the bottom line of the book. There's a lot of forgiveness and resolution and tragic situations, but it's about overcoming, you know, yourself.
Yes.
And abandoning that quest to, I have to find myself. So I'm going to leave it there.
I don't want to give away too much because we would like people to read and share in the total experience of reading the book. The book is Michael and the Ice Princes, a mystical romance, a 2021 finalist Book Excellence Award for Christian Fiction. You'll find the book at the usual places, authorreputationpress.com, one place to go, of course, Amazon, the others, and Mary's website, Mary Mendenhall, etc., that's etc.net. I'll give you that as we go through the program. Second book is The Wrong Side of Eternity, A Present-Day Passion. You present this book from several points of view. Talk about writing it from that perspective.
Well, I think we're all familiar with the four elements, earth, air, fire, and water. And my four main Western characters personify those elements in different ways. They're very different personalities, and they see life very differently. Both positively and negatively. So I try to step into their worldview and speak from where they are. And of course, you know, having different points of view, people have conflicts. So there's quite a bit of personal conflict in the book. And that's part of the passion that's spoken of. It's a relational passion as much as anything.
Well, it's a confrontation we all find in life. You get 6-7 people together and you're going to have 3-5 different viewpoints. So the book is very realistic. Whose story is it?
It's a combination of two stories. It's a combination of the stories of people in Uganda that told me what life was like under Idi Amin, and also, you know, watching at a ringside seat comparison, the Rwandan genocide unfold. It's their story. It's the story of resilience in the middle of great suffering. So that really is the capital P for the passion. As far as the different points of view from the four main characters, that's my own personal story. I've gone through different phases in life and learned some things and outgrown some things. So I can identify very strongly with each of the major four characters and how they view the world. The protagonist in particular, because he has such a ambivalence about things. And I think that's something that a lot of religious people don't own up to or admit, is that, you know, we have these doubts, we have these struggles, we have this ambivalence. So it's both the stories of my neighbors in Uganda, and it's my own story too. Fictionalized, of course.
Yes, of course. It's interesting the transformation we all go through. Some of us admit it, some of us don't. But obviously Mary of today isn't the same Mary of 10 or 12 years ago, just because of the circumstances changing in life. This book is The Wrong Side of Eternity. Subtitle is A Present Day Passion. How did you come up with that title? What do you mean by a present day passion?
Well, there's some sense in the Holy Scripture that, you know, the passion of Christ continues to this day, that people still suffer on behalf of others for a cause, for love of someone else. And so that explains the subtitle quite clearly. It was interesting because I had one reviewer who didn't seem to know what the word passion meant in that sense. But it has to do with spiritual passion, which is basically suffering on or for the good of someone else. The Wrong Side of Eternity it was its title from day one. I didn't have to mess with the title, but basically The Wrong Side of Eternity has to do with the fact that we paste labels on people, and that really, really limits our relationships. So it's really the wrong way of looking at things from an eternal point of view. So it was there. I didn't make it up. It was there. The book made me write it.
Once again, sort of led, sort of like you've got a co-author. You're not quite sure how to phrase that, but you've got a co-author that helped you, that sort of guided you through this.
It's even more graphic than that, Rick. I was praying in the cathedral in Kampala during the genocide, and I looked over my right shoulder, and it was as if the book fell off of the windowsill into my head. It was that intense. So it was more than a vague feeling. It was like, oh my gosh, I have to write this. There were people, there were places, there was a plot. And it was like, oh my gosh. And it only took me, you know, another 15 years to turn it into an actual book.
Well, it's interesting. That was not a subtle message, was it? I mean, it was pretty much tapping you on the shoulder, maybe banging you on the shoulder to get your attention to write this. Our guest on the program is Mary Mendenhall. This particular book we're talking about now, The Wrong Side of Eternity, A Present Day Passion. I have no idea where the time has gone. These books are doing so well and motivating, inspiring so many people. When you wrote this book, Wrong Side of Eternity, what came from real life, what you witnessed during your days in Uganda, and what came from research or a combination?
I did a fair amount of research, both at the in Berkeley, at the seminary there. I did research on women's studies and race studies because of the labeling involved that was mandated. But I did a lot of research in Kampala at the university. But most of the book came from stories and my own experience. Everything that happened in the book happened somewhere, either in the States or Uganda. Nothing's entirely fictional. It's renamed, it's reframed, but the book is very reality-based. And I think that's one of the things that makes it so powerful, because people have lived through such things.
Yes. You structure the book in an interesting way, like a play or a musical. Why did you decide to do it this way?
I think that's the way the book wanted to be presented. Everything is based on the number four. There's four sections of everything. There's four acts. But it saved me a lot of time and description to just open each chapter with a scene as a screenplay would. You know, here's the setting. This is so-and-so's living room on Tuesday afternoon. So that saved me a lot of time. But the flow of the book is very much like a stage play or a musical.
How much of this is autobiographical?
A lot. I'm just going to say a lot, and you know, I can enter into conversations with people, but it's not purely autobiographical, but it's extended, I guess, from things I lived through and learned. I would say that very much.
The book is The Wrong Side of Eternity, A Present-Day Passion by Mary Mendenhall, our guest on the program. I'll give you website information, the name of the other book as well, before we conclude the interview. Your protagonist, Stephen O'Connell, seems pretty unsure at times of what he believes, or actually how to even live it out. Is this ambivalence a core part of his character?
I think he's just a modest fellow who's got a bad case of humility in the good sense. He believes enough to act on his beliefs and help other people, but he doesn't try to step on the pedestal and tell other people how to live. He just encourages people to do what they're good at. And I think, you know, he's admirable from that point of view. But inside himself, he feels pretty unsure at times. And but that doesn't prevent him from acting. So I think he could be quite a good model for lots of people who are struggling, and also people who have been judged by religious people. That's a big theme in the book. And hopefully it presents a healing for many people that have undergone that.
Well, you tackle
kind of church trauma, if you will.
Well, you tackle a lot of labels: race, gender, sexual orientation, religious, even. Do you have a position on any of these that you want the reader to consider, possibly to adopt?
I'm not in a persuasive kind of way, but it's hopefully the book acts more like a mirror, like, you know, take a look at yourself and what you say you believe and see if they match up, kind of thing. Position-wise, my positions have shifted through the years. I am a practicing Franciscan, so my own spirituality is very warm and embracing, and I'm very glad that it's gone that direction. So I don't assume a position on a topic, but, you know, I want to be more loving and embracing generally. Yes. So that's the urge. But as far as topics, I want the reader to struggle with where they are in their own life. I really do. I like it when I provoke the reader a little bit to think about, what's this?
Oh, yes. Sometimes thinking isn't bad. We really need to do more of that and give it some self-reflection along the way. Who is the intended audience for The Wrong Side of Eternity?
I'm thinking there's actually two, and they respond differently to the book. The people in my life that are quite religious and have read the book find it disturbing and convicting in a way, because it does challenge our tendency to judge our neighbor. So that's one intended audience. I have to say, be honest and say that's true. But the other intended audience, and probably more so, are the people that have been hurt by being labeled. And I don't care what the label is, if it's a gender label, a race, an ethnic, labels are limiting when they're pasted on people. We grew up with this Greek idea that things have to be categorized. But if you categorize people to, you know, past an extent where they don't put the label on themselves, I think it has a destructive effect on relationship. So yeah, it's for people that have been hurt by the labels that have been pasted on them. Mm-hmm.
The Wrong Side of Eternity, A Present-Day Passion, this particular book, I'll give you both here in a second, but I have a couple minutes left. I want to talk about what you're working on now. Is there another book that you have planned? Planned for you?
Yes, I am working on another book. It's not a novel. It's more of a memoir/reflection piece based on a rather mystical dream of St. Clare, who was the companion of St. Francis. And it's an interesting book. I'm just in the very beginning stages, but it has to do with the meeting point between sexuality and spirituality. So it's interesting, and it's going to be, you know, some of my own thoughts mixed with this dream that she had, and has inspired people. I think the point of that is that we can learn a lot from one another if we share, you know, our dreams and our visions. We can help each other grow a lot. But I'm just at the very beginning of that, Rick. I've been too busy working to, you know, make ends meet to do too much.
Well,
just a
I hope
research,
we have a
so
chance
far.
to talk about that as well. It has been such a delight having Marianne, the program today, it's Mary Mendenhall. That's M-E-N-D-E-N-H-A-L-L. Her website is Mary Mendenhall, et cetera, etc.net. So Mary Mendenhall, etc.net. A book available, authorreputationpress.com, Amazon, all the usual places. Go to our website and you'll be able to link on, get all of the information, both books, Michael and the Ice Princess, A Mystical Romance and The Wrong Side of Eternity, A Present Day Passion. Mary, the time went by way too quickly. It was a pleasure having you on the program. Good luck on the next book, and hopefully we'll have a chance to talk about that as well. Thank you for being with us on the program.
Well, I thank you so much, Rick, for the opportunity to share. It's been lovely chatting with you.
It has been fun. And again, the books are available at Mary's website, marymendenhalletc.net, authorreputationpress.com, Amazon, the usual places. Link on, information on Mary on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Back on today's program after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.